What do you say you and me take a walk over to the tavern?
Just pull up a chair.
A little something to eat.
Who does life?
Welcome to the Mouse and Castle.
Come on, Johnny, what are we waiting for?
This is a gathering place for fans of all things Disney. So sit back,
chow down,
have some sips, and chit-chat about the magical world created by Walt Disney.
For too long, I've been parched of thirst and unable to quench it.
Well, hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mouse and Castle podcast. I'm your host, Riley Blanton. So glad you've joined us for episode 39 of the podcast. Man, it's like there's been some stuff going on at Disney. Isn't that right, Mr. Aaron Goins?
Well, I guess it will be going on soon. We're, what, That's June true. 30th, and the park's open July 11th?
Less than 2 weeks, sir. Less than 2 weeks.
So there's going to be stuff going on, but I don't know how much or how many people are going to be there. It's going to be very interesting. In fact, I have some thoughts. I don't even know if we have this in the show notes.
But you've seen the protests, right? Like the legit, I've seen a lot of like think pieces and articles going about some of the different unions and Disney cast members who are strongly advocating that they do not open. And I don't have anything in the notes, but I have been seeing that going around.
Yeah, and just the idea of, I mean, they just opened up the reservation system, so we're starting to get an indication of the demand because yes, we're seeing, yes. You know, how many people are, not necessarily how many people, but we're seeing if days are selling out, which they're not.
Mm. You officially have gone through that process now.
Yeah, I have.
Since we last reported.
We had a trip, planned for October, and we're with the hopes that, you know, coronavirus would be far behind us by then, but who knows with the way things are going now.
Yeah.
So we kind of hoped to book it far enough out, and you know, the reservation system stuff did open on the 28th for people who had tickets. So since we already had tickets, we were able to go in there and do it. But yeah, it's interesting to see with things going on right now. Disney will be interesting to follow if, you know, what the demand is once the park opens, how crowded does it get? You know, what is the capacity that they're allowing? Because right now, all indications seem like maybe the demand isn't there as much as they thought it would be.
Yes. Well, I mean, that was your experience. Like, you had no trouble at all, right, getting dates that far out?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, and I just checked today out of curiosity to see if anything was sold out yet. And even the days that were previously marked as sold out in July are now marked as available. So
interesting.
Either they didn't go full, they didn't allow full capacity at the limited, whatever the limited number is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They either purposely left some space or they hit that capacity and decided to add more. I don't know, because there were a couple days that were showing as sold out that aren't anymore.
Yeah. Well, I'm excited that And Aaron, you are learning this at the same time as our audience is, I do believe. But upcoming on the 14th, I'm very excited to be recording that week's episode of Mouse and Castle with a special guest live from his resort at Walt Disney World, Mr. Scott Rifen, who's going to give us an on-the-ground report, that brave soul, of his experience with... You know, he and his wife will be visiting Disney World, masks and all, social distancing and all, and actually get a firsthand feel for what going to the parks is like. And I'm excited that we'll have that kind of on the ground perspective. And Scott's a lifetime Disney parks fan, and he and his wife go every year. And so they had the discussion that, and they postponed, but they were also able to rebook. So. I was kind of trying to schedule the show with him and get a time to get his report. I was like, how mad would your wife be if we called you while you're there? Because that's when we normally would record anyway. It's like, yeah, we'll be back at the hotel. Why not? So that's the plan, and I'm excited. So stay tuned for that episode coming up in like 2 weeks. It'll be crazy. Crazy town.
Yeah.
Crazy town.
Interesting. Yeah.
Well, sir, that's not the big news, though. That's not the big news. Did you hear about Splash Mountain? Did you hear about this?
I did. I heard about Splash Mountain, which was some interesting events that kind of catapulted Splash Mountain back into the news. And then quickly we had the announcement of some changes that are coming.
Indeed, straight from the Disney Parks blog, the headline reads, "New adventures with Princess Tiana coming to Disneyland Park and Magic Kingdom Park. Today we are thrilled to share a first glimpse of the project Imagineers have been working on since last year, Splash Mountain. At both Disneyland and Disney World will soon be completely reimagined." And you alluded to it, but under I would say social pressure and social recognition of the time that we live in, that Splash Mountain is being completely redesigned and rethemed. And with this piece came a complete piece of concept art, which I'm anxious to kind of dissect with you as we look at the path ahead. But let me ask, what was your reaction when you heard this news? Were you surprised? Did you see this coming? I think we had even discussed this before the official announcement was made.
Yeah, I think I don't know that I saw it coming. It's not surprising.
Yeah.
The announcement was surprising to me because I knew that with kind of it being in the news and different, just the awareness that's happening right now with social issues and kind of what's coming to the forefront and things that are being questioned and what is appropriate. Splash Mountain is one of those things where it's not the first time that people have brought up that it could be problematic. And so it's something that, you know, you kind of hear about from time to time, but then it kind of bubbles up and goes away. So for the fact that Disney made that announcement so quickly and that they had already apparently been working on it for a year.
Yes.
That was surprising. That was something that I was like, oh, wow, they were already planning on retheming this ride. Maybe they weren't planning to announce it until now.
Yeah.
But the fact that they had already been working on this is something that was surprising.
Yeah, that it's been in the works a while, I think is a good sign. It's not purely reactionary. It shows a good faith recognition of them wanting to update the ride to kind of the phrasing you see a lot of time is sort of to reflect the time. Because it's based, well, and that's the thing. I actually think a lot of average Disney goers, I think most average Disney goers, have no idea what the basis of the ride is, which is based on the 1946 film Song of the South. So they'll be updating it to be themed with Br'er Rabbit and the Uncle Remus tales that are showcased in both that movie and then in the ride to be themed with Princess and the Frog. And I think we have to at least, we're big theme park enthusiasts, and we're excited to like break down the concept art and what the update might mean, but I think we have to at least recognize the origin of the film and the time that it comes from. And so I think the best way I can do that, Aaron, just briefly here, is to kind of tell it from the perspective of where I'm from, which is Atlanta, which is where the Song of the South premiered. And the best way I can illustrate, I think, why they would want to and why it's really, I think, a really good decision to update the ride is that the film premiered in 1946 at the Fox Theater in downtown Atlanta, a place I've been several times myself. It's a hallmark of the city. But at the time when the film premiered, the black stars of the film were not allowed to attend. It was in the heart of Jim Crow law and segregation in the South. And I think what the film portrays, without getting into like every plot point of the film, it portrays a very, positive view, and I would even say white-centric view of Reconstruction era South. And it shows the black experience in a very, like, well, frankly, sing-songy, zippity-doo-dah kind of way. And I think the sins of the film now, looking at it, understanding it from today's context, is the sins of omission. And this is what I think we have to understand. Disney was creating a film where they didn't want to address racism. There was no context for how to do that, because it was in the midst of sort of the darkest times of the South's history, as someone who's from the South. And I think looking at the film and its sins of omission now for portraying what, or not portraying how awful and dark the Reconstruction and the slave era of the South was, is, I guess, to put it lightly, problematic. And I think we need to understand the context of a film like this. And here's what Splash Mountain does not do. It does not give us context for the film. It doesn't give us context for some of the stereotypes that are portrayed there. Is the ride itself racist? Right? Like, is there overtly? I see these arguments online of like, well, it's just a bunch of fun characters in Splash Mountains. What does it matter? And I think it does matter. I think it does matter that we understand the full context of the time that that film came out and why the way culture viewed Black Americans at the time was wrong. And I think there's a reluctance on some to see that. But I will say this, and then I'll have said my piece, Aaron, because we're getting more serious than we ever have on the show before. But I think it's just important to recognize that the reaction I saw on Twitter and online has been almost overwhelmingly positive. And the few naysayers, especially the ones who just love the ride and love the memories that they have of the ride, to them I would say this. Remember what Walt said, and that Disney is not a museum. It's a theme park. And it is to grow and evolve over time. And I think I love Princess and the Frog. I only saw it a couple years ago for the first time, I have to confess. But I love the story, and it fits perfectly with some of the theming in the area. And some of the creative team behind it, I'm really excited about, including the lead project is the same lady who worked on Mickey and Minnie's Runaway Railway, which has been very highly reviewed. And they've even brought in to consult the original designer of the ride, of Splash Mountain. I don't know if you knew that, Aaron. I was reading an article earlier. So that's I guess, the way I can kind of explain the context of this film in the way that it connects to me personally and where I grew up. I've never seen the film all the way through, but I definitely remember it being on some of the sing-along VHS tapes that they used to put out. But Aaron, I don't know if you had anything to add. I just felt compelled to kind of talk about it from my perspective there, and hopefully that's not like too much or too serious for a Disney podcast. But it was important to me to say.
I think you saying that the online response has been overwhelmingly positive, I think it's probably true in certain circles, but I think that if you go to kind of the diehard Disney fan pages that exist in like maybe more of like a Facebook ecosystem,
gotcha,
that there has been a lot of pushback on this decision.
Yeah.
So I think there will be, and the thing is, I completely agree that change is good, and I'm excited for the change for this ride, honestly, because, and I know you went through kind of the more serious discussion about this topic. Yeah. So I'm not going to like, you know, continue to talk kind of down that road, but looking at it from just a Disney Parks fan perspective, I've always liked when they update stuff, and I always like the use of kind of more of the current IP. So Splash Mountain was a ride that, although I enjoyed going to Disney World and riding Splash Mountain, it was never, because to me, Song of the South was a movie I had seen as a kid, but it wasn't one that was in my typical rotation like some of the other movies.
Yeah, it was never released on home video. The company chose not to ever release it.
Yeah, so I don't even know how I saw it, but I know I have, and I have memories of watching it. So I didn't, like, as a child, I didn't have a full understanding of kind of what that movie was or what it was representing or not representing. So I knew the characters as an adult, you know, rode Splash Mountain and kind of like, oh yeah, I remember these characters, but didn't really, you know, think about the full context of it. So, but I never really had a big attachment to the ride because it's a cool ride, but the characters didn't really, they weren't part of any of the kind of more modern IP. And so the idea of them updating this ride, getting rid of the old characters that are problematic and attached to a problematic movie, and updating it with characters that it's the opposite, and it's modern. You know, it's the more modern IP. So any chance to kind of update these rides, I get really excited for. And I'm excited for, like, the new look and everything. And I'm not even a big Princess of the Frog fan. Like, that movie is really pretty far down on the list for me as my favorite Disney movies. But I just like when they do new stuff. And so when I heard the announcement, I was excited from that perspective too.
Yeah, it kind of... What do you think of it for what it means and the possibilities of incorporating Princess and the Frog as maybe an extension of New Orleans Square, and at the very least minimizing Critter Country? What do you think happens to Critter Country and the Winnie the Pooh attractions over time? Is this something that they kind of try to rope entirely into more of a New Orleans backcountry vibe?
Maybe over time. I honestly haven't really thought that much into it. The kind of designations of the areas of Disney World or of Magic Kingdom or the Disneyland Park have never really been something that I pay a ton of attention to. So a lot of people were, you know, I know when this kind of first bubbled up and people were like, oh, you know, this ride needs to be rethemed, even before Disney made the announcement, there were all these ideas bubbling around where people were like, oh, like Princess and the Frog or Moana. And I was kind of thinking, oh, Moana would be cool, and didn't even think of the fact that Moana wouldn't really fit the theme of that area. Right.
Gotcha. Yeah.
So for me, I wasn't really thinking along those lines. I think that seems to be more important to some people than it is to me, as far as everything kind of fitting the theme. Because, I mean, they're redoing all of Epcot now and kind of, you know, eliminating areas and renaming areas and kind of retheming stuff. I mean, they're going to continue to always do that. So I think it's just going to be an evolution. And whatever they're doing with Splash Mountain in the long run will work. And I think it fits, you know, the look and feel of it. It's not going to take that much to really kind of reskin that ride. I think the ride itself will probably be almost identical. I think it's just going to be a matter of kind of how they decorate it.
Yeah, it is interesting to see, like, because I feel like Critter Country has always been a little bit of maybe an afterthought for the park. It's never been something that I really cared that much about, and I jumped into the Google machine, because, as you know, Aaron, I'm not a huge, and if you and all you got to do is look at our iTunes reviews, I'm not the Disney parks expert of the podcast by any stretch. So, but I did lean on, like, some Googling and research, because I was genuinely curious about kind of the origins of Splash Mountain and Critter Country, and it used to be Bear Country, and it was had like the Davy Crockett's Explorer canoes. That was like what they had in the area. And then eventually they brought up the Winnie the Pooh attraction, which I confess is still one of the ones that's I've never been to, the Winnie the Pooh attraction. So it'll be interesting to see if they keep Winnie the Pooh as sort of the sole remnant of Critter Country, if New Orleans Square kind of extends into the bayou that is the Princess and the Frog theme.
Yeah, or if they keep the name, you know.
Mm.
Splash Mountain, because you have kind of the iconic names of those rides, like Space Mountain, Splash Mountain.
Yeah.
You know, I think that they would probably want to try to keep the name somehow. So maybe they change it to Tiana's Splash Mountain or something, some name that it's still called Splash Mountain, but they add a little bit more to it. Or maybe they change it completely. I don't know. That's something they haven't really announced yet.
Yeah. The one, so, because they have... I kind of could see Disney slowly incorporating this all into one theme, but it doesn't seem like an easy thing to do. I think the change for Splash Mountain's just the beginning, but I could see maybe changing the Hungry Bear restaurant into something that fits more into, like, Tiana's Palace, right? Like the restaurant. I could see something like that working. Like, I don't know. There seem to be limitless options for what they could do, but I don't know. I think their priority right now is just the ride itself, and that's where they're starting. I don't know if they have any other further grand plans.
Yeah, and I mean, the layout for Disneyland is different than Magic Kingdom too. So I mean, what some of the things that you're talking about,
That's
as far
true.
As like Critter Country and all of that isn't going to apply to both parks, you know.
Yeah.
Because I think right now we're talking about things that, in both parks, you know, and kind of blurring the lines a little bit. So
yeah.
I think that because the Winnie the Pooh ride at Magic Kingdom is not even in that same area.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that how it impacts one is going to be different than how it impacts another one. And honestly, I have no doubt that they're going to make it work and everything will blend together well. And you're still going to have that same ride. It's just going to be called something different and it's going to be themed differently. And it's just going to be part of the progress. And progress at Disney is why people keep coming back. You know,
that's
why
it's
I get excited every time I go to Disney World. There's a ride I haven't ridden yet.
Right?
Or a new themed, you know, the Frozen ride that's super popular at Epcot. That's just a reskin of an old ride.
I mean,
you know,
they don't say, I'm just putting it this way. They don't say it's a great, big, beautiful yesterday. They say it's a great, big, beautiful tomorrow. And that's, you're right. I think that's what I'm most excited to see what the Imagineers have to do next. Because they're always innovating, always bringing really cool stuff to the parks. Bob Weiss, he's the head of Walt Disney Imagineering. The D23 blog did an interview with him to ask him some questions about this in general. I won't go through the whole interview. We have a link to it in the notes. But he asked a frank question. Jeffrey Epstein's the guy over at D23, and I've interacted with him a little bit here and there on social media. Seems like a super cool guy. He hosts the D23 podcast. And so
his name's Jeffrey Epstein?
It's not that one. Different one. Jeffrey R. Epstein. I'm sure he never gets that.
Yeah, because I just like...
I think it's in his Twitter bio.
Documentary.
Yeah, I think it's in his Twitter bio. But he interviewed the Bob Weiss and asked him, which I was kind of impressed that they actually asked this frank of a question. Why retheme an attraction instead of building a new one? And Bob Weiss said, quote, "We have a long-standing history of enhancing attractions with new magic, like Pirates of the Caribbean, and completely retheming others, like Guardians of the Galaxy Mission Breakout. We completely understand that these decisions aren't always popular, but I think our biggest fans know that we care as much as they do." And then finally, what can guests expect when they head to the Bayou? And he says, "Working closely with our partners at Animation Studios, we're expanding on what guests know and love from the film today. From a timing perspective, guests will see Princess Tiana throughout the experience. Hint, it's after the kiss. And she and Lewis are bringing friends together for their first ever Mardi Gras performance, along many other favorite characters from this instant classic." So that gives us a hint. It's sort of like, it's not, I know, re-experiencing moments of the film. It's not just a ride-through, but it kind of carries forward the story, which I like that.
I agree. I was looking at the Disneyland map.
You got
I was getting distracted.
No, you're good. Well, all right. Well, let me distract you further here. Tell me, we saw the concept art, and I think it gives us a little bit of a taste of what the ride will be. What were your big takeaways from the concept art?
I mean, I'm excited for just the look and feel and the retheming. I think that they're going to, some of the elements that you can kind of see in those images where there's like that, the glowing, you know, elements that I think is something that they do really well. You can see it when you go to Pandora.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Kind of that look and feel. I think that's something they could really add to this ride in the dark moments and things like that, where you have that kind of luminescence. And That's something that popped out to me in some of the concept art that I think is going to really look cool.
It reminds not just of Avatar. It fills a void in what the ride is now, because Splash Mountain's not a great ride at night, especially if you're getting all damp. Like, I noticed the crowds definitely dwindle off once it's dark, and you can't see as well. Like so I think some of these, I think they're fireflies. It makes sense to me.
Right.
That we can see maybe some theming there, and a lot of sort of deeper, richer colors that are associated with Splash Mountain itself, in the way that this concept art is. You see Princess Tiana there with a bunch of kind of colorful gifts and food of all kinds, and fireworks. Regular old Gandalf here, I guess. And then you of course see kind of the ride vehicle placed there, so you get maybe a little bit better idea of what it would look like.
Yeah, and I think with this new theming with Princess and the Frog, it really opens up what they can do with it.
Yeah.
Because if you're using the characters that they had before with Br'er Rabbit and stuff, like, it's kind of a very specific theme that there's nothing that they can do that's magical, because that's not something that's set in kind of a magical realm or magical, you know, story. But with Princess and the Frog, you have the element of kind of the voodoo element, you have the magical element, you have, you know, the bayou with the fireflies, and like I feel like there's just a lot of stuff that they can do meanwhile. Yeah. And using kind of the cool technologies that they have now that the previous theme was limiting.
Yeah It's I'm gonna be really excited to see how they innovate with limited space, just that ride and the kind of Critter Country area, and how it fits in. But I really think it'll be a nice addition overall. Well, let me ask you about this. You like Frozen 2?
I like it more now than I did when I first watched it.
You like? I feel like those who are... I see all these people on the Twitters talking about how amazing this docuseries is, and that and they're finding newfound appreciation for Frozen 2, and to them I say, welcome home. And I think, yes, and I can include you in that group.
I'm one of those people, because I admitted on Twitter that I, after watching the first episode, and that's all I've seen, by the way, I haven't seen the whole docuseries.
Oh, dang, you're in for a treat.
Yeah, so I've only watched the first episode, and just watching the first episode, and this would go for any Disney movie, honestly. You know, we're just being presented with Frozen 2, but they could do a docuseries like this on any Disney movie, even some of the most
disliked
Disney movies.
It'd be nice if they do a documentary like this on Mandalorian. I'm just saying. Shots fired.
But, yeah, so I think that, you know, just seeing all the work that goes into these movies and how long it takes and all the talent involved, it really does start to make you feel bad about any kind of criticism that you had.
I saw that tweet. But
so that's kind of where I was coming from. And I have seen the movie a lot since the initial viewing in the theater. And that's usually what it takes for me, especially with musicals. Once the music starts to get in your head and you start to really appreciate that side of it, then that's when, you know, I start to be like, okay, I like this movie now. Like it probably went from being like, eh, I don't know if I really liked that they did a sequel, to now it's like, okay, that's actually one of my favorite ones to pop on and watch right now.
It really is. Like, and that's the thing, is that what it does, and for those of you who haven't seen it, first of all, what are you doing? Go watch it. But it's a first of its kind docuseries that it kind of showcases the final year of the film and just how much the Pixar style of iterative storytelling and workshopping and kind of a, for lack of a better term, you Star Wars fans will know, story group idea of just bringing in creative people to test and really look at every moment, every line, every song, every line of a song, every creative decision, storytelling decision is just beaten to a pulp as they try to perfect this story. And it's amazing to see just how much these films evolve over the course of, like, even the last year of production.
I don't know that, like, I was kind of feeling bad as I was watching that first episode, and for the writers, and just kind of they do these screenings and then everybody just rip it apart. Yeah. And I'm just sitting there like, wow, I don't think I could do that. Like, I'd have a hard time if I spent a lot of time coming up with a story to just hand it off to a group of people to kind of group think what changes need to be made. It's like, well, no, I'm the creative person. I'm the one that made this story. That's the way I want to tell it, you know? So there is a part of me that wonders, you know, they're trying to make this perfect movie, and it's probably why these movies are so successful, because they really do. They kind of take in every opinion and kind of make it appeal to as the biggest audience that they can make it appeal to.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
And so there is something to be said for that and how successful it makes it, but it also kind of does take away some of maybe an original artistic intent. And that's something that saddened me a little bit as I was watching this.
You do get the sense, and I won't really spoil it, but it's interesting as you go through the series, Aaron, you'll see how they, one of the central realizations is how some of the big themes of the movie, of self-discovery, are really muddy in those early drafts and the early cuts of the film. And adults were getting it as they did like test screenings and as they were doing more story conferences and stuff, but kids were not. And they go into the specifics, the central theme being the song, not Into the Unknown. Of all the times for my...
Show Yourself.
Thank you. Show Yourself for my poor brain. Show Yourself is the sort of central moment of the film where it's Elsa starts the song asking the question, making the demand, but sort of in a questioning way of show yourself. I'm dying to meet you. This voice she's been hearing. And the question of who that voice is and what it means to Elsa is something that kept changing over and over. I can't wait, Aaron, for you to kind of experience that story as it unfolds in the documentary, because the storyteller's intent of the story being a, at least Elsa's story being of self-discovery, is still there, but the decisions of how she gets there are all over the place, and the way the songwriters go back and forth and change it, it just blew my mind. And so if you're listening to this and you have not seen Into the Unknown, The Making of Frozen 2, you've got to watch it. It's hands down the best piece of content Disney Plus has produced. And I'm a Star Wars fan. So
So have you not watched the Mandalorian docuseries?
I've watched every episode.
Okay.
Doesn't hold a candle. Not even close. It's just because it's interesting to me as a huge Star Wars fan, but it doesn't dig into the meat and the drama and the heartache of creative storytelling. It's a conversation between Jon Favreau and a lot of the different creators talking about some of the decisions they made. But it's a very comfortable and I would say public relations focused series, which that is much more just kind of like generic behind the scenes, which is fascinating to me and I love as a Star Wars fan. But like this docuseries is a true documentary in the fact that it's documenting human drama and storytelling of these very real people telling these stories at Disney Animation. And it just made me have a whole new, like you said, a whole new appreciation for the storytelling art that is Disney Animation Studios. How far they've come, man, since, really Frozen. Well, Tangled, I guess, really, that has ushered in this modern era of animation that I think future generations are going to look at in the exact same way that we look at the 90s and Lion King and Little Mermaid. I really do.
Yeah, I agree. I think this, the new renaissance, or I think they already coined a name for it, but I don't know what it is. But
exactly.
I agree with Tangled kind of kicking it off.
Mm, yeah. Well, but, enough of
me. Yeah, documentaries for me have always been problematic just because I tend to really enjoy getting involved in the story and the characters.
Yes,
and
yes.
I don't really like to know a lot of the behind the scenes because it takes it away. Like when I watch movies, I don't want to be thinking about now every time I watch Elsa run up that, that ice
yeah.
thing and make the ice and slide, I'm going to think about the process that they came to that decision instead of just enjoying the story, And so as much as I like this docuseries and I'll watch the whole thing, I don't know that I would want this for like every release. Like I don't need a detailed behind the scenes thing for every single release. It's fun to see it every once in a while, but for me, it kind of takes away the magic a little bit.
Yeah. That's fair. Well, you know what? We'll part on one more Disney Plus note. I feel I'm such a Disney shell tonight. You know, listen, come at me, bro. But I loved that series. It was so good. My wife, God bless her, cried more times during that documentary than she did during the actual movie. And I'm not saying it's with real stuff, like human drama, like one of, that's a spoiler. There's some real human heartache that went into the making of this film that, it makes you understand the film that much more after you watch the series. So that's all I'm going to say about it. I have a parting shot on Disney. They're doing summer movie nights on Disney Plus. They've announced a full lineup for the whole rest of the summer. You know, we do our segment pretty much each week, talking about what we've been watching on Disney Plus. That's kind of been this whole second half of the show. But I did want to highlight some of these releases, Aaron. Of course, you talked about we're hyped. Me and Savannah are hyped for Hamilton coming out just in a few days. Can't wait. They've been releasing the promo clips. It's amazing. I'm ready for Hamilton to come back in the mainstream in a way that I think only this kind of release will. And it's, I think it's the perfect time. But we've got Solo, A Star Wars Story, and then a decent amount of the Fox catalog is coming out, including the X-Men films and The Greatest Showman coming on Disney Plus August 14th.
Yeah.
So, like, look at them go. Look at the any. I sent you the link, and it'll be in the notes here for the episode. But any of these particularly jump out that you're looking forward to, Aaron?
The only things, so the two things I'll say about this list is some of them I don't consider to be family friendly.
Oh, interesting.
And I probably wouldn't let my 8-year-old watch. You know, if you're talking even Hamilton, although I'm going to let him watch it just because he loves the music so much, but we'll probably skip some certain parts.
Mm, gotcha.
Has some very adult themes, and I know they edited out some of the cursing, but I don't know that they're going to edit out entire scenes with, like, you know, Mariah. So I think that would be one of the things that jumped out to me. We're talking about the X-Men movies or some of these, you know, kind of PG-13 type movies.
Yeah.
It's something that when you say family movie night, I think young kids, because I have young kids, whereas other people might be thinking, you know, teenagers. So
that's fair.
So that was one of the things that jumped out to me. But
you're not going to, he's not going to watch the Wolverine.
Right. Yeah. Right. So thing is Greatest Showman, because I actually love, I love The Greatest Showman. I love The Greatest Showman's music, I guess I should say. I don't necessarily love the movie that much, but the soundtrack is amazing.
Oh, yeah.
And it's one of my favorite movie soundtracks, and it really plays like a Broadway show. Like, the music is very Broadway-esque. And that was one that, kind of along the lines of Hamilton, I always thought, oh, it'd be cool if Disney owned Hamilton, because then, you know, I love Disney, I love Hamilton, those things could be together. And I always used to say the same thing about Greatest Showman. Mm-hmm. You know, it was something where when I first watched it and listened to the music, I was like, this feels like a Disney production, even though it's not Disney. And now it technically is owned by Disney.
Yep.
So it's interesting that these things kind of all come together. And I guess that means Disney could, you know, start playing Greatest Showman music in the parks. I don't know. You walk through certain areas and maybe you'll hear, you go to the big circus tent area, you know, by the Dumbo ride, and you start hearing,
right? I mean, it fits. It is a very, it totally reminds me of Disney when I first saw that film. I remember the first time I watched that film.
And I had no idea that was, I guess Fox owns it.
Yeah, yep, it's a Fox property.
Yeah, I had no idea. So when I saw that on the list, when you sent the list over, I was very surprised to see The Greatest Showman's going to be on Disney Plus.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It is coming out this August, along with a bunch of Marvel movies and Incredibles 2, Beauty and the Beast 2017. Maybe we can have our great Beauty and the Beast debate at that point. That might be, I can't, I'm still, that's going to be the peak show for Mouse and Castle, whenever we finally sit down and debate which Beauty and the Beast is a better film.
Did we review the new one, or had it already been released?
No, it had already been released just not too long, but yeah. But listen, that's coming up. That's right after our second anniversary show. We'll be going into 2 years this August. Crazy, right? Right? Yeah. Crazy town. Well, that is going to wrap up this episode of the Mouse and Castle podcast. Thanks for listening, guys. Hey, make sure you stay in touch between shows. One of the best ways you can do that is head over to the website, mouseandcastlepodcast.com. There you're going to find the latest episode, this episode, episode 39, the links to everything we've talked about in our show notes, as well as links to all of our social media right there on the website, and you'll find our newsletter right there, top right corner. Click on the button, subscribe to the Mouse and Castle newsletter for weekly updates on the world of Disney. You can also follow us, of course, our social media. It's at Mouse and Castle for Twitter, as well as Instagram. I've been posting up a storm on Instagram, so go check it out. I'm going through my camera roll, finding any fun pictures of Aaron Goins doing random fun stuff at Galaxy's Edge. That's basically,
I was going to say that. If you want to see pictures of me that I have not pre-approved, then go to Instagram, because I'm seeing these pop up. I'm like, oh, I didn't even know that picture existed.
That's me. Do I? Wait, I took the... Yeah. No, listen, I have my ways. I have my ways. At Mouse and Castle is where you want to go. Yeah, make sure you subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. You'll find us. Share the show with a friend. If you know anyone who likes Disney and likes podcasts, let them know about Mouse and Castle. Another way you can do that is, of course, leaving us a rating and review. Spotify or Apple Podcasts, whichever you prefer to listen to us, you can find us in both places, so make sure you do that. But until next time, I'm just going to say farewell to you and the blue bayou. That is definitely something I just made up. Does it work?
Yeah, I was trying to think. I was like, is that from the movie?
There's a bayou. Was it blue? I don't remember.
I've only seen... So I think I've seen Princess and the Frog 3 times.
Mm. I saw it for the first time at one of the Goodfellow Disney nights. Was one of the first...
I saw... I'm not even sure. I think I saw it in the theater. I think it didn't make a big impression. And then I rewatched it with my kids recently. Because I was kind of like, oh, I need to revisit this now that my kids are getting older. And then just the other day, we rewatched it again. So I've seen it a total three times.
I've queued it up on Disney Plus on my list. I'm going to watch it again with the context of the new news. So that'll be fun. That'll be a good time.
Yeah.
Until next time, guys.
We're still on.
This is like, you know what I did? I always do like the slow fade.